taken from the album The Banshee and the Moon, Shine On. Chloe, did you think that was a good choice?
Yes.
Marvellous.
Well Holly, done, Holly.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I did.
It's a nice way of actually sort of working through that and showing that ultimately we all shine on, particularly if you're a top author, the likes of which many people can only dream of actually sort of reaching the stage of quality scenarios. Now, Holly, I passed over to you a text earlier today entitled...
The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream.
The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream. I thought that was just such a wonderful all-round narrative, was genuinely emotive and tapped into so many areas, etc. And then, lo and behold, dropped through the post, comes Mr. Two Bomb, written amazingly, actually, just before The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream, and it literally drove me to just tears, affirmation. So, now, who do you think could possibly have actually written such a wonderful all-round text, or pair of texts, brace of quality text, as The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream and Mr. Two Bomb? Who do you think, Holly?
Bill Coles.
Bill Coles. Oh, William. Exactly. Yes. You see the way we rehearsed on this one, William, to see the way in which the whole thing sort of worked and the spontaneity in which our finally our English student just...
Yeah, you dovetailed.
Did you think? Yeah, exactly. It's seamless. All right, let's move on to the next thing. Chloe, would you like to give me a number between 1 and 281, please?
16.
16. Okay, early in the text, etc. It's the usual random selection, completely random from that point of view. And this will hopefully lead in to the piece from that point of view. The warehouse was devastated, and we were over 3 kilometres away. I picked up a piece of masonry, and as I threw it onto the street, I looked about me. Carnage such as I would not have believed possible. It was as if a giant hand had smacked down from heaven and crushed everything beneath it. Save for Hiroshima's few concrete structures, there was not a building that was not either destroyed or yawing crazily to the side. Through the dust and the smoke, as far as the eye could see, Hiroshima had been turned into a wasteland of rubble. The people, too. I haven't even begun to mention the hundreds, the thousands of benumbed victims, so awfully burned, their clothes in shreds as they tottered aimlessly through the streets. There's so much to say about them that I hardly know where to begin. I'll try to do them justice later. But as I looked about me, that I noticed the fire for the first time. Within minutes of the blast, there had been little outbreaks of fire all over Hiroshima, as power cables and kitchen stoves had set light to the tinder-dry houses. There had also been those will-o'-the-wisp flames puffing in the air as the radiation burned itself out. What I saw about me, though, was much, much more than a series of individual fires across the landscape. It was a wave of fire that was sweeping north through the city, whipped up by the sea breeze. I don't know if that does it justice, William or Bill, but he knows.
Yes, yeah. I mean, when I get the thing put onto a tape, I'd like you to be doing the reading, Alex, please.
William, that, again, it's just as always, I feel as though we've bonded, and this is one of the reasons why the campaign is already starting for Lincoln Inspired Year 3 to focus on your good self, William Coles, ace author. Already
well, very sweet of you to say so.
Well, it's very deep. One man miraculously survives the atomic bomb of Hiroshima. 2 days later, he catches the last train home to Nagasaki. He arrives just 90 minutes before the world's second atomic bomb explodes into his life. Unlucky. As he battles through a scene of apocalyptic destruction, he is plagued by one constant question. Is he lucky or unlucky? This is his answer. Clearly, unless it was a past life, Bill, you weren't actually there at the time.
No, I wasn't. But I think 10 people survived both bombs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mm. They got blown up on August 6, 1945 in Hiroshima, and they spent a couple of days messing around in Hiroshima, doing not very much. And then since there was nothing there, they decided to go back home, and they caught the last train to Nagasaki, and 1 hour after getting into Nagasaki, they were blown up there too.
You'd almost think it was personal. Mr. Truman, what's going on here, you damned Yankee? You know, for goodness sakes. I love the way in which you sort of underplay it by saying, you know, they bombed in Hiroshima and spent a few days doing not a great deal. Well, you know, it's an atomic bomb, for goodness sakes. What can you do? The level of description, I thought, was actually phenomenal. And also, it was frighteningly realistic, because I think that the connection, I mean, certainly the graphic nature of what we saw in the desert novel that was there, and the sand area. I thought that worked well for the marathon system. This one, you kind of, I felt actually sort of came in it from a different angle, but one that worked so sensationally. I mean, I particularly like the line about the girl, and it takes actually until page 283 until we actually find out the girl's name. But I mean, as a character, really important. But I can tell that as an English undergraduate, Holly, you're already quite keen to find out a bit more about Mr. Tubom, are you not?
Yeah.
Yes. And Chloe, as an American studies student, likewise, quite keen?
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Okay, Chloe and Holly, I will send you a couple of books so that you can get your teeth into it then.
Good, good.
Oh, thank you.
See, he's just a wonderful person, isn't he? Yeah, and I will reciprocate by saying we will formally say that Mr. Tubom will be the book of the month for May 2014.
Cool. Yes, well, yeah, I better come down to you for this one.
Oh, we'll get it even sort of slightly sort of we'll move it up to our Southside studios in the northeast as well. So, you know, success in every sense of the word. So yeah, and people say book of the Asia. No, it can be a classic from any time. But I just thought outstanding sort of text from that point of view and worked very well. Anyway. One man, two atomic bombs, and an epic story of love, loss, and redemption. When you're sort of writing this whole side of things, and it is, I mean, as indeed many writers have actually said, there's a quality to the writing that makes it such an easy read. I mean, it's something you might well put down to your tabloid expertise, etc., but you manage to actually produce page turners, which literally have got quality just oozing from them, Bill. You can use that as a quote, by the way.
How very kind of you. Well, that's... That's very sweet if you'd say so. It took quite a long time to research it. I was fascinated by the thought of a guy surviving both bombs. And so I devoured all these, about 100 books about the bombs. So I really knew my stuff. But I had to spend some years working out what the plot was going to be and what was going to make it into an actual page-turner. Because most books about the bombs are of necessity rather gloomy, because you've had 500,000 people dying. And in the end, I sort of worked it out, and I've turned it into a story of redemption. It's rather like Scrooge with his three ghosts. And in my case, we start off with an awful character who, through the bombs, turns into... somebody who is sort of half decent. Anyway,
you say that, Bill, but I must admit, maybe it says more about myself as the reader, that I could actually empathise and sympathise with the line that, look, you know, apart from the extramarital infidelities, which, all right, there's a moral issue there from that point of view, but in terms of his response and his reaction when people are actually asking for help and he's kind of saying, look, I've got to go, I've got to move on to other things, I could identify with that. I mean, it was almost a human tale of redemption that we're going through here. And again, it was one of those things where I thought the character of the girl in particular, you'd have to say, well, yeah, she kind of captured on the short and narrow, apart from one very unfortunate sequence where the boot up the backside is used to very ill effect. I shall say no more, but I thought, it's outrageous. That was the time when I kind of lost sympathy with the character. Until then, I kind of thought, well, I could see, I mean, Holly, how would you react if a nuclear bomb, heaven forfend, should actually sort of take out York, for instance?
Oh, God. That's it.
This is not an invitation to any Russian listeners, by the way, or you know, any sort of, you know, foreign powers to actually say, good idea, you know. If the CIA are listening, obviously, I sort of step away from that side and say, sorry, NFM isn't responsible for the whole thing. Oh, the panic. Anyway, returning to that question, Holly.
Make sure you have plenty of tinned food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you're covered for a zombie apocalypse as well. You've got... two birds with one stone.
Okay. Well, I suppose it's better than sort of cardboard on the window or blackouts. Chloe, Norwich, same sort of thing. Norwich, what would your response be from that point of view?
I'd probably feel very lucky that I was alive, to be honest.
The thing that, again, brought it home, and obviously none of us were actually around at the time, so we can only look at it from historical records, and thank the Lord, as I say, it's the only two occasions where it has been used in warfare. But it was the way in which we also saw the American actions through the eyes of Japanese, that line of Truman saying, well, it was a 1-2, it was a clean bomb, radiation, what's that? You know, it sorted out things, it ended the war, and so on. I mean, that kind of thing, when you're writing it, Bill, did you find from your time as a correspondent in America that there's still that kind of tendency to say, and I realise I'm generalising here, but is there still that kind of essence of thinking, well, actually, you know, nuke them. That's what it's all about. Send in a few nukes. It'll sort the thing out, you know, effortlessly.
Yeah, they over in America, certainly for a long time, maybe not quite so much now, but there was an attitude that the Japanese had it coming to them. And they had been working on these atomic bombs for some time. Hmm. And they could quite just as easily have dropped a bomb on Berlin. Hmm. But they didn't want to do that because they already had big plans for Germany after the war. Hmm. And but they wanted to drop the bombs just to show they meant business. And so they've been planning to do it, drop a bomb on Hiroshima for some time. And then after the war, they had this sort of cover-up, first of all over radiation. And some of them were sort of saying that radiation was actually quite a nice way to die, as opposed to hanging on for 2 years. Mm. And then the guy who piloted the Enola Gay, which was the plane that dropped the first bomb, Colonel Tibbets, he became a hero. And afterwards, he'd go along, he'd fly a bomber over Texas, and they'd drop a mock-up of the atomic bomb, and there would be the mushroom cloud, and everyone would be cheering away. Yeah, this is what a nuclear explosion looks like.
Mm. I mean, in terms of taste, let's draw our attention to a recent news story, which I have to turn around and say I equally was quite disturbed and disheartened by the way in which some of our media colleagues were sort of taking this with glee. And that was the suggestion that to launch the Commonwealth Games in Scotland, they should actually demolish four of the houses there, blow up four houses, leaving one particular block of flats, not a house, block of flats. And the one block of flats that they'd actually leave would be actually occupied by asylum seekers. I'm thinking, why not go to the next level and actually possibly see if we could get, you know, a couple of Afghanistan pilots to maybe fly in to a couple of, you know, I'm thinking, that's not entertainment, surely.
Yes, well, I mean, that's over on my patch because I live
yes,
in Edinburgh.
Yes, absolutely.
And if, I don't know how that got through. I mean, this sort of crazy idea should have been put down instantly.
Yeah.
And whoever, you know, ultimately authorised should be obviously taken out and shot.
And yet you get Jeremy Vine, there I've named him, saying on national radio, oh, but it's explosive, it's good, it's exciting, it's what the public want. I don't think I want. I mean, you know, Holly, opening of the Commonwealth Games, would you sort of think, oh, yeah, we want to actually see former blocks of flats actually blown up, exploded, it's austerity times, let's blow things up. Doesn't say much about sort of attitudes to Scotland, I must admit, but anyway.
Probably not. When is blowing something up for entertainment at other people's expense ever a good thing anyway?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the IRA, they weren't a barrel of laughs. Sorry. Well, other freedom fighters are available, but still.
Vine's got a point that we like looking at it, but that doesn't mean that it should be, you know, you might as well say that we like watching public executions. If you had public executions at Tyburn in London, you'd get, it'd be bigger than Wembley. You'd get so many people coming along. But that doesn't mean that you ought to be screening it or showing it.
Madame la Guillotine, obviously great entertainment during the Terror in France. It's fantastic stuff, etc. You know, bring back the hanging. Chloe, thoughts from yourself?
Does seem like a sort of thing. It's a bit old-fashioned, isn't it?
A bit old-fashioned.
Like something that maybe would be accepted a while back, but now I find it a bit odd.
I mean, we were talking with Annette Andre, obviously, the first part of the programme, about how we are guilty of anthropomorphising animals and taking them to ridiculous extremes and so on. I mean, this is an area where, again, echoing sort of Bill's point there about who thought this was a good idea, I just thought, it's not a good idea. It's just, you know, it's you know, what Danny Boyle did with the opening ceremony of the London Olympic Games was something which was unique and it was a spectacular and it worked on that basis. It didn't blow up the country or blow up sort of blocks of flats, etc. Anyway, it's by the by.
Just drop the Queen out of a plane.
Well, yeah, but she had Daniel Craig beside her, so it wasn't as though she was ever in any real danger. Anyway.
Oh yeah, that makes it completely
fine. You know, it's just a lie entirely. Listen, let's move on. Holly, any questions as an English undergraduate and indeed soon to be postgraduate student for the Kohlsmeister?
Actually, I saw a little snippet of an interview you did
Well, not an interview, but a snippet of a video a couple of months ago. I think it was it at Leeds Uni, where were saying about, it was a video saying about how people love reading about sex scandals. Now, it was only like...
And have been for thousands of years.
Well, yeah, definitely. But it was only like a 3-minute video, so I wondered if you could expand on that at all.
Well...
In about 2 minutes, actually, Bill. Yeah, it's all right, there's an irony in there.
I was probably talking about the red top agenda of the tabloids, and the fact is that sex sells. People are fascinated by the private lives of the rich and the famous and the powerful, and they have been since Greek times, and particularly they like the tragedies of how these rich and famous come a cropper. And this is still a very, very potent mix today. Though, unfortunately, the whole nature of celebrity has changed now. And so the tabloids are giving us this sort of fodder of celebrities who are reality TV stars, and they are not genuine celebrities. So the whole the value of these stories is being cheapened. It's not, it's, you know, people want to be reading about real stars, not... not these fake reality stars.
A recent survey of 2,000 people by TalkTalk TV found that the top programmes that made over 40% of people change their career or consider or reconsider their career, One Born Every Minute, Prime Suspect, MasterChef and London's Burning. Standing, really. Says it all, really. One Born Every Minute, Prime Suspect, MasterChef and London's Burning.
I want to become a fireman.
Yep. Clearly, yeah. Although in the case of Fahrenheit 451, you actually start fires as opposed to putting them out. But that's something we'll talk about with Robert Lloyd Parry, who's actually putting together a one-man show, technically one-person show, if we're being politically correct. It's the one-man show version of The Time Machine at the Lincoln Drill Hall on Saturday the 10th of May. And indeed, Nunky Productions have actually brought H.G. Wells' science fiction classic to life in a thrilling one-man show. Do you think Mr. Two Bomb could be developed as a one-man show, Bill? I just want to throw that out there.
I mean, yeah. Just a couple of nuclear explosions. Yeah. We could have a big bang or two. Yeah, no problem.
We're always looking for cross-media approaches to these kind of things. Very important.
Yeah, put it on at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, it's always a start. You know, that's the important thing. And not so much the fringe, but still, could be beyond the fringe. Chloe, thoughts from yourself?
Yep.
There we are. And that was the Chloe Baker Norwich thought for the day. It's fantastic stuff. We have got a little question for you because it is Shakespeare's birthday, and as you rightly pointed out, William, the day in which he parted from us on this mortal coil to shuffle off to say we are such stuff as dreams are made of and our little life is rounded with a sleep. The cloud-cut towers, the gorgeous palaces, yea, all that it inherits shall dissolve. Were you inspired by Shakespeare as a youngster, Bill, or did you just find him sort of just a dull person who obviously nicked all his best material from either his wife or Ben Jonson?
Inspired. I mean, I do like him. He's got some good stuff, but I'm afraid having to study his plays for O-level and A-level, like I had to do, is really hard going. I mean, if you want to be put off Shakespeare, then spend a couple of terms reading King Lear and Titus Andronicus. That will, yeah, it will really turn you off. But I mean, he's great. The number of words he gave to the English language, and yeah, I think that when he wrote, it was like just turning on a tap. And you can sort of... yes, he is wonderful, though the plays are better seen than or at the cinema than actually reading them. I don't think he ever thought they were going to be read. I don't think he would have conceived of young students going over and over again through his lines. Mm.
Of course, much the same thing can be said about your own work, which, as I've seen when I go 200 or 300 years into the future, people are poring over every little comma and phrase and nuance of Mr. Two Bomb and saying, yes, what did you really mean by this? Very important on that basis. I do like the notion of on the next edition of the Complete Works of Shakespeare, we could actually have the little line from your good self, Bill, he's done some good stuff.
He's done some good stuff, exactly. Yeah, I'd be pretty happy to have done even a hundredth of what he's done.
There we are. No, I think we'll just have with he's done some good stuff. That'll be fine. I think that's we'll put it through the system and the magic will happen. Chloe, can you remember those last two questions to put to William Coles or Bill at this particular moment in time before we head off to speak to...
Let me guess the one. It's one of the questions going to be, have I had a nice time?
I know.
And the one going to be, will I come back again? I have had a nice time, and yes, I do want to come back again.
Last week, Rachel Warren, also a Farm Your English student, suggested we could actually adopt one of the questions we actually put to Tara Bennett, the SFX East Coast editor, and also throw this one in, if only for confusions. So, what did you make of the flying monkeys? I can't mention that. But I don't think it's going to work somehow. You know, I mean, have you had a reasonably interesting time coming back again? So what did you think of the flying monkeys? Maybe if you're interviewing Sam Raimi, would have worked. We're still floating with that one, Bill. I mean, Bill actually advised...
monkeys? Who are the flying monkeys?
Characters in Wizard of Oz.
Just those guys! Yeah. The guys were the blue guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I didn't know they were called the flying monkeys. Didn't they have a... Right, okay.
No, they were flying monkeys.
Flying monkeys. Yeah,
wings. Yeah, well, their flying monkeys were pretty scary, actually.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the critical thing. So we might... The flying monkey question hasn't died completely.
The flying monkeys. I thought it was some band that had been playing in... Lincoln.
Well, we've got the Arctic Monkeys, of course, and yeah. We have the monkeys. But, you know, it's the flying monkeys, something else we could actually sort of consider. It is a thought. Anyway, it's a yes and a yes, and one of these days we'll actually appropriate one of Bill Collins' questions as well. But you know, it's kind of like the killer one. It's just when you sort of... It's the Columbo questions, as you said, you know, just as you're heading off. So, and just one more thing.
What is the most irresponsible thing you've ever done?
What is the most irresponsible thing you've ever done, Chloe Baker?
Left an essay to the last minute.
She's a rebel rouser. She's a...
And Holly?
Oh, I don't think that's suitable for...
Not suitable for on air. Bill Coles will return, Mr. Tubom, and a whole heap of other goodies, all the It's Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark, with a tune which I think has a certain relevance.
Enola Gay. Thank you so much.